call Economic Development Committee meeting Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. 6:02?
6 o'clock.
Okay. Got Alderman Bellissimo, Alderman Frieders, Alderman Koch, Alderman Hernandez here, and city staff. And we have Alderman Funkhauser and Alderman Potcher also in attendance. Citizens' comments? Assuming none. Minutes for correctional approval for November 7th, 2017. Any issues? All in favor, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? New business. Item number one, EDC 2018-01, building permit reports for October and November 2017.
All right. In October, we added five single-family detached homes and four build incentive detached homes. There's also 14 commercial permits issued in that month. In November, we added five build program incentive homes, one single family home, and 12 commercial also. So as of right now, we are at 154 single family detached homes, 12 single family attached homes in the form of townhomes, and the big standouts for our commercial that have been issued so far is one two-story senior apartment, which is 51 units, and then one assisted living facility, which is 73 units. So we're got lots going on right now. That does not include the hotel or anything like that.
It's frozen.
Great. There's no questions. On item number two, EDC 2018-02, building inspection reports for October and November 2017.
We did 315 inspections in October. The vast majority of those are single-family homes, and closing out a lot of the fences and decks and things like that that should be closed out. And then in November, we did 250 inspections. Obviously, we saw degeneration of the weather, and things are not moving as fast as they were at one point in time. November, we did a lot of inspections at the GC Housing location over there because they're trying to move along, so we've been stopping by every day, every other day, just to make sure everything is going along the way, going the way it should be going, and they can proceed as best as possible.
Any questions? If not, move on to item number three, EDC 2018-03, property maintenance reports for October and November 2017.
October, we adjudicated four separate citations. All of them, two of them were dismissed for offensive odor, and then for the property maintenance, for it was a vehicle on property, was dismissed also in Claremont Court. Weeds was found liable. That one was issued a $4,500 fine, and then commercial vehicles, and that would be on 126 Wing Road. That was also found liable for $2,400 during the month of October. We did speak to the property owner after adjudication was done. They were confused as to why they were found liable. We said...
So they didn't show up to the hearing after they'd been sent notice, after
yes.
notice after notice?
And, yeah, yes.
Sketching.
So exactly. That's why I explained to her. She wanted to know if there was a way to get it vacated, and I told her she had to speak to the police department and have it incontested. Apparently, this is a totally new tenant with semis out there. I just kind of, and I nicely asked her, I said, well, last time you were getting citations for having semis. She said, well, I thought the semis were fine, but they're parked in the wrong spot. I said, I spoke to you myself. I said, you cannot have semis in that zoning. It's not allowed. You can't be there no matter what. She's like, well, I can't do anything about it. Now they have a lease. So that's where she left it at. So,
yeah, well,
is that lease well enjoy your words. Future citations.
Yeah. Is that exactly. The lease cover the permit?
No. At $2,500 a pop, I would.
Wow.
Better yeah. get found somewhere else to park them because I haven't seen them in the last
couple. We charge more than Chicago to park, $2,500.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is wow. For 35 days, though.
Oh, so it's a bargain for Chicago.
They have coupons.
So in November, we also, heard six cases. Probably the standouts in this one would have been the ones on Worsley. We've obviously had some contention back and forth with the residents back in that area as far as, you know, what is city property, what is not city property. So we had to kind of spend that by going around where the swim club properties used to be, and some of the homeowners over there are more than happy to let us be in their backyards to take pictures and document. Those two were dismissed. The gentleman owns the property. Apparently he had been calling the police department to talk to someone, not realizing to call us. So when I spoke to him, he removed the items that were in violation and cleaned up the property. He did have one of those things was a trailer was on the property that he's rehabbing. It's an old trailer. So our kind of accommodation with that was is he's putting up a fence of some sort on the property adjacent to his garage so that he can have the RV in there while he's repairing it. And he's going to get a permit for the fencing and any kind of roofing he puts over it. So that way the neighbors won't have an issue with it.
Which one was that one?
That was one on Worsley, 105 Worsley. And everything else got dismissed because it was all in compliance by the time we got to hearing.
So questions?
Nope.
We'll move on to item number 4. EDC 2018-04, economic development update.
Hey, you've got a couple of reports in your packet. Lynn's actually on vacation. The only thing that I wanted to highlight that is not on the report is on December 22nd, the state released it's an application for a potential industrial user that fits along the line of, you know, a heavy industrial manufacturer. And so they're soliciting everywhere in Illinois, and I think in other states too, for like a 200-acre parcel with rail access where there's already zoned M1 with utilities and all these other things. So we're going through the application process for Yorkville and for the Lincoln Prairie site to see if they're interested in siting there. We think it's a little bit of a long shot with the way that it's phrased. There's a lot of talk about incentive programs that are either Wisconsin or Indiana or other places. So my guess is this will be a big picture decision for whoever the company is that's trying to site somewhere in the Midwest. 300 or 400 jobs, a couple hundred million dollars of investment. So it's a big thing that we're looking to recruit. On the more practical basis, though, the application is a few pages long, and it requires pretty intense due diligence answers on our part. So we're going through that and treating it as a learning experience to see, you know, what we hadn't thought of with our manufacturing and industrial goals and kind of how we've been doing due diligence packets in the past. So I would expect that by some point next week we'll have that information available for you guys to take a look at. The actual application is due into the state on Friday. We think that we'll be close to being done, but probably not totally complete. So we're going to do as much as we can with information from the property owner, submit it, and then if there's additional information that comes in, we can submit it after the deadline and see if they'll take it. So it's
the
exciting.
The application is due to the state?
Yeah. The company goes to DCEO, says, this is what I'm looking for. We want everybody, like the Amazon.
So they put up their feelers,
yeah,
and bring them in and give it to the company.
And we submit to the state. Okay. So we're going to try, and it is good for us to do. I just, you know, I wouldn't get your hopes up that we're going to be number one on the list. But it is something that wasn't in there.
Lifetime supply of Skittles.
That's an incentive package that nobody else can offer. Yeah. But then if anybody has any questions about the businesses that are in the report, happy to answer them.
Great.
Any questions? Just fine. All right, move on to item number 5, EDC 2018-05, Cedarhurst final plat. And I think these next two were from December, if I remember right.
So the applicant, Cedarhurst Living, they had a preliminary plat that was approved as part of their final PUD amendment. They have included some additional items on that plat which needed to come back to the PZC for approval, and that was the dedication of some roadway and the indication of the area that's for the storm facility. So that was included on their plat. The city engineer reviewed it, had no comments. It went to PZC last month on the 13th, and the recommendation was unanimous for approval. So you will see it on the January 9th city council.
Any questions?
Okay, there, and then move on to item 6, EDC 2018-06, Bristol Bay Amended Annexation Agreement and Final Plat.
Okay, so Pulte, who's here tonight, will be able to answer some questions that I don't cover in my presentation, but essentially they are looking to kind of shelve a portion of the development that had been partially platted and some areas that weren't platted because the market is just not primed for that housing type. And preliminarily, they were looking at condominiums and townhomes. So a portion of units 9 and 11 will be shelved, as well as all of units 12, 10, and 13. They are also proposing to amend the annexation agreement because they are asking for a reduction in their letter credits or bonds that they had to put up. They finished out whatever work that was already existent in those areas that were that they're proposing to make dormant. And what they're doing now is selling the property to another holding company. And they're asking for us to allow them to take down the required letter of credit from $2 million to $200,000. So they did complete whatever work that was needed in there. There are utilities that run in that area. We're asking to keep the $200,000 as security for those utilities should anything happen. And they have finaled out some of the other areas around there. So they're moving forward on other property in the area. And Rob Getz is here from Pulte to answer any other questions that you have.
One of the things I thought of, when they, let's say they find a buyer to buy these properties, and that person becomes the one then that would have to issue a letter of credit at that time for what they want to do with the pieces that are being sold off. Is that true?
If they begin to develop. So what happens is it'll sit with only the $200,000 in place. At any time in the future that someone wants to pull a building permit and develop, they would have to then provide the full required amount of security.
Okay. So basically it would be like the original ones.
That was kind of my question. So all of the improvements that are done, so there's roads and curbs because there's no additional roadways that go to the other part of the townhomes, right?
I don't even think there's any roads in that particular. There's a...
So the areas that that are not developed, there's just water main, sanitary source, and storm source. Okay. $200,000 is basically securing the water, sanitary, and storm sewer that we installed in those areas, which, you know, to be honest, has been in the ground now for almost 10 years.
Yeah.
And we just had it all cambered, and it's all in great shape. But, you know, we're leaving $200,000 in place just in case. But all the other bonds that would be released were for grading, roads, curb, and everything that obviously isn't going in.
And there's no retention anywhere in this area, correct?
There is a roadway across Unit 9 and 11.
Yeah, but that's the portion that's going to... Yeah, I mean, I'm just... Every time we talk about either releasing or changing something, I just want to make sure we don't have what... has happened again, which is
correct.
Residents are left with having to fix things. Thankfully, these people had an SSA, so they have completed infrastructure anyway. But, that was my only concern, so I'm cool.
So the other thing I was thinking of kind of goes along with that, what about maintenance, like mowing and thinking if you had to burn it or anything like that?
So whoever is the new property owner would be responsible for maintenance, and we'd handle that the same way we've handled any other property maintenance. We'd go out and ticket it or issue a citation warning and then ticket it.
For a whole parcel?
For whatever area is affected.
But there's no parcels. It's just a big open field.
There are parcels. Some of these areas have been final platted.
By 9 and 11, but not 12, 10,
correct.
13.
Correct. So
I'm thinking like what Raintree did over there.
Right, but those are clear parcels. The majority of that, 60% of that, is just open land.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. We'd cite them by unit, then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or however they leave legally designated.
However they're legally designated. So wherever the violation.
So we're not getting rid of the plat, we're just saying.
Correct. Okay. What we're doing is we're amending the plat to just take out those areas that have been completed with the infrastructure and just leave the areas that are dormant.
So when the next buyer comes in, they still have these plats. This is still on the property.
Correct.
And it's still for condominium and townhomes.
Until they change.
Until they come in and request. So we're not wiped, like we did in the south side, we wiped out those entire subdivisions.
Nope.
With the stroke of a pen. We're not doing that.
No.
Right.
This is,
that's what I was wondering.
Right. This is similar to what we did for Kindled Estates. When the new buyer purchased it, they wanted to release some bonds. And so we went in and we did an evaluation of what was already completed and we reduced it down to whatever infrastructure that was left.
That was just my concern with that if something happened to the utilities that are already in place, that we'd have some sort of, that it's not on our dime, you know, God forbid a water main.
Right.
I know it's a brand new
line
and it shouldn't, but it's negative 30 degrees already now, too.
Right. We were asked, but we were, staff did not accept the infrastructure improvements in those areas. So they are still the responsibility of the developer.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? So this will go where next? To council?
Yes, city council. So city council will review the final plat as well as the amended annexation agreement on the 9th.
Okay. We'll go to item number 7. EDC 2018-07 service
Thanks.
Agreement for building plan review and inspection.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.
So the city has gone out for an RFP for building inspection and plan review services to supplement some of the work that Pete has taken on. You notice just in housing alone, we have over 200 units he had to review and inspect. So we would use this company as ad hoc as needed, you know, to do plan reviews and to do inspections. And the companies, we did have three companies respond. Two ended up being who we interviewed, and then B&F ended up being the consultant that we have chosen to use. We have worked with B&F before, Pete and I, and various jobs that we've had before. We also used B&F here temporarily when we were in between building code officials. So we're comfortable with them. This is the contract that they presented. Their fee schedule is included. The fees would be paid by the city. The appearance of whoever reviews the plans will not be noticed by anyone submitting building permits. So it wouldn't be a different fee that they would be charged, and there wouldn't be any documents that go out with B&F's name on them in the review. It'll all still come through Pete. He'll review it, give his final comments of whatever they provided, and send it off to the builder or the permittee.
Just as a reminder, this is on demand only. There isn't necessarily a schedule.
That's what I was going to say.
It's overloaded, or if there's an efficiency there, or there's like a technical issue that we have a question about.
That's what I was asking, whether it's our intention to use this, just use it now, or it's just kind of a catch-all.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was for under Exhibit A, page 1, for the fee for the single family, it's ambiguous because it says $560. But it says $635 in a parenthesis.
Yes, and we had them address that. Actually, I called that out. It was in
I'd rather
places.
Have the $560.
And we had them address that. They provided back in writing that it is the amount, the numerical number. And not
$635?
Yes. So we will have them revise that. I thought that was
Do you know who this guy is? This is the 10-pound chocolate bar guy from IML.
Oh, really?
Ken, you don't know who this guy is? That's the guy that gave you the 10-pound chocolate.
Okay. A couple years ago?
See, now he gets a contract. See how it works? 10-pound chocolate.
I just
think this is for perpetuity, I believe that there was a raffle involved.
Yes, there was. Sure.
There's no direct exchange services.
I want a full investigation. Chocolate cake.
Just everything that's on the tape.
And this is a little bit of background too on the RFQ that we had posted. The intent of this was to actually get an entire stable of consultants that we could have a contract with and then negotiate the rates down. And so we had a couple people that we could choose from depending on the project. H.R. Green, who we actually would prefer to use, submitted. They would not agree to no limitation of liability under contract provisions, so we had to nix them for that. And we're working with them to try to get that struck from future contracts. And then the other consultant we just didn't feel was going to be
they weren't responsive.
Yeah.
We kind of had a Q&A response that we wanted from them. Here's an example of a building permit. Can you provide us with, you know, some comments? And they never responded back.
So it is possible that at some point in the near future, if things change either with that other company or with HR Green, that we would then bring a supplemental contract for your approval as well.
Yeah, in general, it's, you know, we have 930 plan reviews this year, so it kind of everything from deck plans to the biggest thing is, like, the other day, D.R. Horton dropped off 18 residential plans. At the same time, I was still doing two ongoing commercial plans, and it just kind of gets jammed up to make that two-week deadline. That's predominantly when we'd be using it, that or if I was out of town or ill or anything like that. It just gives us a little bit of a deeper bench, like a better terminology, to make sure we keep everyone's needs going in the right direction.
So what would we do now? Let's say you were away and you were sick.
I would have my briefcase and my laptop with me away.
Yeah, we do have agreements with Oswego Building Department, but we can't just ask them, you know, 24 hours notice if they can get something done. And they've been helpful.
And then these particular companies, would you know before the 2 weeks, like well before the 2 weeks is up, that, hey, I need to hand this off?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a procedure kind of already kind of drafted that says, if this, then that?
So our biggest thing is large commercial. That takes up a lot of Pete's time and review. So large commercials will go out. So if there was like the hotel or another development like that comes in, we would automatically send that out.
Okay.
Yes.
Residential will keep it in-house. We're not.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. No.
If residential will play into the factory.
Not now. Yeah. We're not anticipating.
A review like the hotel, I mean, it could be an excess of 140 hours of review time on that. So they have that done in a two-week period plus all other responsibilities that are going on. It kind of, sometimes it adds up. So
in
that case, even if it's just that, to let them do the first cursory review of it and call out some blatantly obvious issues, and then we can respond back to the architect and have them have to resubmit, at least that they're moving forward, we're moving forward, and we're not at a stalemate at all. We don't want to hit any stagnant areas where nothing's happening with plants.
So recently we had that email from the guy doing Heartland over there. Is that a separate thing from this, though? Is this just because it's actual building inspections and not development? Because you mentioned the hotel.
It'll be a plan review fee, but the cost, the differential would be the city would cover. So they would just pay what the normal building permit fee would be per our ordinance. They're slightly above ours, but not quite off. We did a couple comparisons. So we charge, is it 654 basic, and then there's a 20 cent per cubic foot over.
Yeah, cubic square foot over. I'll blink on that.
I think it's 100,000 or something.
Yeah, I think so.
So anyway, we did a comparison. Our number was probably about 5% less than their number, because they give a complete number that's the final number. It's not based off of, you know, square footage or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's comparable. So we have in our budget $10,000 to $15,000 set aside for plan reviews. So anytime that comes up, whatever the difference, we'll pay them directly. They don't have to charge the permittee. The permittee won't even see a site. They'll just see what we would charge per our ordinance.
It basically allows us to keep growing and not have to hire full-time staff to handle plan reviews. We've tried a couple times to hire part-time personnel, and it's not out there right now unless we're offering full-time. And I think plan reviewers from $75,000 and $80,000 a year. So.
Yeah.
And then the biggest crunch on Peak's time is plan review. We don't anticipate that we'll be using them for inspection services as much, because we do have that intergovernmental agreement with Kendall County, and we also have on staff, well, not on staff, but a contract with a local building code official who comes in sometimes and does plumbing inspections because he's a licensed plumber.
Here?
So I think you've pacified me on the fact that there will not be a cost passed through to the developer. And I just want to make sure that that's, the city is going to eat any overage from the difference of what we have on the books. Okay, so you've pacified me on that there. The memo says about 720 hours is what we anticipate. Are we going to be tracking through their invoices of how many hours we're going to hand off to them so we can evaluate next year?
Yes,
you know, staffing, when we're going to need to bring on a permanent person for staffing.
Absolutely.
So how will that...
We're also internally going to keep track of, you know, the different types of commercial buildings they review for us, the amount of time they spend, in rough estimate per square foot, as the use of the building and everything else, and how that goes in depth. That's one of the big things that interests me as far as the whole process is they have a huge staff there, so they will... And I don't know who they delegate to every time, so it won't be able to just go to one person, it'll go to four people. So it'll be a mechanical, a plumbing, and a structural reviewer all have it at the same time. So that way we can know internally, you know, we're seeing an increase of this type of buildings. So we want to probably lean heavier if we do desire to hire more staff on someone who's more competent in the HVAC or the structural plan review.
Okay. And when it comes to accountability, who's going to be the person that is accountable to making sure that what we are being invoiced by is legitimate? It's value-based for what they are providing as a service, as we are actually eating some of that. I know we're not passing it through, but who's going to evaluate and make certain that, we're getting is justified?
Correct, that would be me.
That's you.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
and that, I would assume at some point we'll maybe have a report back on what we're getting for that, how many reviews.
Sure. We could do, when we do our annual or our monthly inspection reports and plan reviews, we can add that in there as well.
Because I think it would be good just to make sure that as we go through the first, you know, two, three, five reviews, run an assessment of what it would take us to do it versus them, make sure that we're kind of on par, similar to what you've already done preliminarily. Just give me some confidence that what we're getting is reasonable to continue with the service.
And I do plan to do the first several plan reviews in tandem with them.
Perfect.
And to ensure that we have a... I made it very clear to the general there that we're not as interested in issues that just require resubmittal. We would actually want structural and code-based review.
I don't want to have reviews that generate bullet points just to have bullet points.
Right.
Exactly.
And that was part of the discussion. And if you look at the application, they charge a flat fee. Mm-hmm. They do not charge for plan reviews.
It's
a flat fee.
Sometimes it's just, you know, establishing who the title is, you know, the page numbers, and it just can get ridiculous in terms of the information that they charge by the hour.
And
it's good that this is a flat.
Correct. And that's what we had, Pete and I talked about, and that's why Pete is going, they're going to provide us the comments in Word format. So Pete can go through and, you know, edit out whatever.
And then put it in our title.
Right.
Perfect. That sounds good.
Along the lines of the initial question, spoiler on the next year's budget, but there will be a full-time position recommended for community development, whether it's planner, plan review, inspector, or all of the above remains to be seen. But given the fact that we've had 1,000 hours budgeted for now, I think 2.5 years for an inspector and haven't been able to find somebody through multiple job recruitments, it's clear to me that, you know, we need to go full-time with that 1,000 hours. And then the additional 1,000 hours is something that will need to be done. So whether there's anything recommended above that is still a few weeks out. But, you know, it's clear based on the inspection load and just the workload that, you know, we were, I think, getting close to falling behind. And I think this year we ended up cutting out property maintenance inspections a little bit more than we should have.
Right.
So that's something we need to get back on top of next year.
Last item, number 8, EDC 2018-08, property maintenance code section. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, for the previous item, I would like to bring it to the January 23rd City Council meeting, the second meeting in the month, because I want to make sure that contract has been revised by them to address.
Okay.
Alderman Cromwell's.
Okay.
23rd.
Yep. All right. Item 8, EDC 2018-08, Property Maintenance Code, Section 302.8, Motor Vehicles.
There's a couple memos in the packet. I'll kind of turn it over to anybody else that wants to talk. I won't rehash either of them, but mine just kind of lays out the conversation that Joe and I had about ticketing of unlicensed vehicles throughout town. And then Christy's got the survey data of how other places have it on the books and how we've been enforcing and ticketing it, or how they've been enforcing and ticketing over the past year. So, and so this boils down to a basic question after that as to whether the proposal to maybe modify that section is reasonable, and then if so or if not, you know, do we want to have a conversation with the mayor and then with me on how we end up enforcing it. So, so that's all on the table, and I don't know if you have anything else to add as far as the actual
proposal. I would say we need to enforce it, but maybe change a little bit. I don't know.
How so?
What? What's like a year date or something? Because we have car shows in town. Like the motor, the one that was, I have to send that out to California to get redone and back. You know, it's a different process than your Toyota where you can go buy an engine. I mean, I could buy one, but it has to come out of like California. You know, it's restoring a car is a time-consuming process. So I just hate to see somebody's hobby get nixed because of the ordinance.
But don't you keep the car in your garage but and you're not working on it?
Yeah, I've got two of them because you can't just buy a 51 Ford part. So you have to have two of them hack the body part to come up with one good car is where my issue is.
Yeah, because originally when I talked with Bart about this, about the other case that came up, I was under the impression that we went and cited the person and they never had a chance. Then through the conversation, I learned that it wasn't an immediate citation.
No, from what I understand.
They had a chance to rectify it, chose not to, by pulling the car in the garage or turning it around the back of it. So that I had a different view on it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I am of the opinion that the cars need to be in a garage and not outside in the open where people can see them. Because, I mean, we are incorporated. We're not unincorporated.
Right.
And I understand, you know, the hobbyist that's kind of an issue. But, I mean, I also understand how hobbyists work. My best friend's dad was working on a Model T when I was 15. I'm 45. He's still working on the Model T. Right. It hasn't moved since I was 15. It's still in the exact same space in the exact same garage.
Right.
And that's just my concern. I don't want, you know, just, I think people will use it to their advantage. I mean, if you guys are for it, maybe we limit it to one vehicle or something, you know, put a cap on it. But I prefer them to be in a garage where they're out of the elements, out of the...
Or you put it in storage. You could put it like I have at my vet for a while, I used to put it in storage over the winter because I don't drive it. I never drove in the winter.
Right.
I rented a storage unit.
Well, but this is an inoperable.
Right, yeah, you're towing it back and forth from a storage unit.
So it's inoperable or unlicensed. So so I think one of the vehicles that has been a topic of discussion in the past is operable, which is unlicensed.
So if it was licensed, it's okay.
Yes.
Do we have
a permit for, you know, for letting cars sit there?
But what about licensed and inoperable?
License plate?
Would that say okay?
Right. I guess the thing is it's kind of a big ordinance. I don't have a clarification. I'm not a lawyer.
To the extent of the difference between inoperable and operable, if a vehicle has current plates on it and all four tires are up and ready to full air, and we will never transgress a property line to determine whether a vehicle is or is not.
Right.
So if it doesn't have flat tires on it, it has current tags that we can see, or if we can't see the tags at all, we automatically err on the side of the resident's benefit to say that the vehicle is operable.
All right.
And that's why we're more than free to say, you can change the parking of the vehicle, we will not approach it, you can put a car cover on it, you can park it in the garage, anything as long as it's not...
Cinder blocks.
Turn it around so that we can see the sticker.
Yeah. I mean, the back plate's against your
garage. Seeing that's... Mine was sighted, it was backwards, so if I was to inflate the tires,
It would have been
if it looks like if it yeah
okay
at that point
I just I, right
if from the street if we're looking back and we see a vehicle that has four solid tires I can't see the tags if they're current or not if it has a windscreen I mean if the bare necessities of okay. what an operable vehicle is in our determination not being mechanics is that it looks like a vehicle and it has four tires that are up. I'm assuming it runs. Giving you the benefit.
Right here. Right.
What about car covers?
That's the other guy.
That was one of the options we've always suggested. We've always said, too. If it's a, I mean,
cover
if it's
the
a plastic car, you're working on restoring.
Inflated tires and you're good.
That's fine. I just need that clarification because I'm the one that gets bombarded by these because they know I have a hot rod. And
yeah.
So,
well, in your fairness, too, there have been a fair amount of discussions and other tickets written on properties that have been, you know, questioned. So.
Which I'm fully for because it looks really bad if you ticket one person and not all of us.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of why I mentioned to several people, you know, I'm kind of in that same bag. You might want to look at my car.
Right. And then during this period of time, we did have our property maintenance person out, you know, doing sweeps as we do. But generally, I'd be able to lend assistance myself, right? I would have our other building inspector out helping. So if things are kind of isolated to one area in town, that's because she was working her way slowly. Normally we would do it all at once and all three of us would be out there, but we were so busy this year there was no way to do that.
She was doing her job. I don't care about that part. That's another alderman that, but you know, she was doing her job. It should have been cited. I'm not saying that it shouldn't have.
Well, it sounded like it was, from what I learned, and it was cited, it, they had a chance to remedy it, and they
did. Well, yes, the other one.
Yes. Because my big thing at first was, what if you have a neighbor that has Benetic in you? And,
it's a sticky situation. It can be.
Can they call and tell you to come out and check the car?
They can call and complain about an unoperable vehicle, but at the end of the day, our standards for what's operable and what's not operable
right.
is
that's,
the same.
That's all. That's fine as long as what the standards are.
You know,
I'm okay with that.
To Ken's question, though, just on a bigger picture, we have that all over town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's residents that hate their neighbor and then they call in on everything that happens. So, you know, we go out there and we don't necessarily care about the backstory. We look at it and just say, you know, does it meet, you know, what we're doing elsewhere in town? Is it a violation? And if so, really, we want everybody to fix things. So that's why I don't know that it's required on every property maintenance type violation that we send out to send a notice, but I think we do.
It's a 10-day violation. Notice, with the exception of grass.
Yes.
Grass and weeds.
Five days post.
Everything else is 10 days.
And we, technically, if we wanted to, we wouldn't have to recommend dismissal at time of hearing. And you're talking 35 days from the day the citation is issued. When the hearing comes forth, and then you have the 10-day notice from when we send you out the letter.
Right.
So you're at 45 days. If the violation gets remedied the day of the hearing, and we go out and inspect it, and it's gone, per what Kathy said, we've got a compliance. We want.
Right. No, you guys are doing your job. I'm not. That's not what I'm trying to say. No, you do an excellent job.
You know, the only concern I have about, like, you know, exempting antique vehicles, then, you know, what's the definition? If we do a 20-year antique,
25, but that gets pretty high. I would do it at least 30 or 40.
All right, but then you got the inspector going, now, is that a 65 or a 68?
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
right.
You know, it's like, come on.
And what about that semi-truck that's sitting somewhere in, you know, it's 30 years old.
Yeah, Lord knows what the hell that is. 80-ish, probably.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you try to fix a problem, you cause more problems.
Right.
So I think as long as we have a clarification on how to what we're looking for, how to remediate it so we don't have issues with people like you who are actually doing it.
Yeah, and that's it. It's got to be movable on the car cover. It's pretty simple.
Manor? Questions?
Okay. This is actually one that dovetails out of this one. I got a call on Christmas about a guy who was upset that after we had snow, it was 2 inches, he was asked to move a car. It was clearly had flat tires, and they were harassing me. You know? Number one, you parked on the street. But number two, you had an inoperable motor vehicle on a city roadway.
So which citation would you like?
I was just miffed that someone would tell me that I not only was I doing this, but I also did that. Why are you harassing me? And I wanted to go,
you should totally check out next week's meeting minutes or meeting agenda. But I just found it interesting.
It's on the road, but he was lucky. The police, generally, the police would have impounded, would have towed it, impounded it, $500 fee.
So I just, I think you guys are doing a great job. I just think you missed one, and you should have worked on Christmas. So it was a gimme.
I was going to, but the kids wanted me. But no, in general, we do this a lot. These citations for predominantly these people that have collisions in cars that have, you know, don't have full coverage, so they bring them home and they're going to fix them in their driveway. We get a lot of those generally right after winter's done. There's four or five that I can think of top of my head that happened this year where it was, people are like, well, we're just going to fix them and we're waiting for the insurance or this and that. And, you know,
the frame's back, good luck.
Yeah, we just, you know, like in the health, there's half the vehicle's missing, it's not. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
So did you get the direction you need?
Yes.
Okay. Any old business? Any additional business?
You know, we have a bunch of people online complaining about the gas prices in Yorkville. So I said I would bring it up to make everybody happy. So I brought it up.
I actually made a bunch of phone calls. And everyone said...
People do not understand how the economy works, right? We don't set the gas prices in the United City of Yorkville, do we?
We don't even have a gas tax on it.
Thank you.
No.
You know why?
A municipal gas tax.
People complain.
Over the holidays, you could go into Plano, and they were $2.21, and it was $2.57 here.
Right.
And the funny part is...
My answer to them was
that's Casey's. Casey's are coming
here. So as soon as we get Casey's...
And then people were telling me, well, you're going to lose tax revenue. And I'm like, no, it's based on population. I don't care where you buy your gas.
You get, the gas stations do generate a fair amount of sales tax when you still pay on gasoline. So the retail component of that. But MFT is per capita based.
Right.
So.
Anyway... I brought it up. I'm not calling a gas station to tell them they should reduce their
price. I was on phone with a lending institution, and
market.
I made like 7 or 8 phone calls, and everybody pawns it off to the next person. And the one person that I talked to was corporate. I think she was reading from the same blog post that I found, because someone did their own research, and it says they take a screenshot of area gas stations, and they put in all what they have. They do an average, but then dependent on traffic counts, they do percentage increases based upon that average.
Right.
And the most traffic on 47 is at 47 to 34.
It is the most heavily traveled intersection in Kendall County.
So, they have every right to attempt to gouge
they can
whoever
charge
they want.
$8.
Yeah.
They have the gas station right outside the entrance to Disney World, $7.50 a gallon. Yeah. And people go there. It's a free, it's a free country.
Yeah.
All right.
If you go 2 blocks down, it's $3.
Because the one I've always heard is they're all in cahoots.
Yeah.
So every station in Yorkville, if the one changes it, everybody else changes it. Well, that's up to them, right?
Right.
Well, a good case in point is, remember when it was like 5-something a gallon?
Right.
Yeah. BP at the time was redoing their refinery at a cost of about $12 million a day in payroll. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it was $5? It wasn't because of oil shortages, that's for damn sure. It's because they're going to make money no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, if the gas at the corner of 47 and 34 was $9 a gallon at both gas stations, and then $1.50 down the street, maybe we could possibly go, hey, is there something that we don't know? But they also have the right to go, no, that's just what we charge.
Right.
No, it's the free market. It's a free market. Now, if they owned every gas station in the county, while it would be shady, and they would definitely be gouging, I don't really think there's much that we can do.
Which, that's why when I was ironic, there was Casey's. How will they fit when they come into Yorkville?
They can set the damn price however they want.
It'll
they can set it the same as Plano, or
they
can
think they'll be a nickel cheaper than.
If they're smart, they would. Why not?
Yeah, I just that's what I noticed that.
It seems like that's what they do,
huh?
It seems like that's what they do. With the one down in Salmonac, same way, it's always like 3 to 5 cents
that's cheaper, right?
And
right. Well, I just brought it up so I'm good conscious. I can tell the people I brought it up. And B, that the EDC committee has determined that we are not contacting the gas stations on behalf of the city to tell them what to do. Great.
I did exactly what
Spur has. Okay, anything else? Meeting adjourned.